हरि ओ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे.
Summary of chapter 5. Vairi Bhakti is Nitya Dharma, not Naimittic Dharma. Lahiri Mahashaya had left behind a large household in Shantipur. His two sons were both highly educated. The older, Chandranath, who was 35, was a zamindar and managed all the household affairs. Zamindar means they're landholders, so they hold huge tracts of land. And so from that, they're either farming or they're renting, or in some way, or control of villages, so they take tax. In some way, they're making, their livelihood from owning large tracts of land. So it means in the past, for some reason, then somebody gave that to them, right? So it's because they're not through business they're getting it, but it's that they were running either classes or they were doing something for somebody, and so they gave them all this land to take care. So previously that meant they were either doing big government service, running schools and stuff, and so then what comes off of this, then that would run the school. Something would be there. That would be generally the case. Otherwise, zamindars normally would be vaishyas. Like that. Yes.
Which means that the father, Lahiri Mahashaya, was not a zamindar.
It means Lahiri Mahashaya, he was, and it just means then that turned over to his son. So his son is now running the household. Yes, you see, he managed all the household affairs. Previously, the father would have done it. But now he's older and retired, so now the eldest son is doing it. So it means that they were, they're highly educated. They, so there's something about them that's special. Plus Shantipur is a place of the Brahmins, so it probably is something that goes way back in time, in history. He was a well-qualified doctor, disinterested in spirituality, yet an esteemed member of the Brahmana society. Like that, Yes, how do you say? Like being an atheist, but being, a strong member of the Jewish community. You can do that. How it is, because you have the culture. You're following the Brahminical culture. Just because you're not interested in the purpose of Brahminical culture, hey, that's another thing. But. The second son, Devidas, from childhood had been studying Nyaya, logic, and Smriti, Vedic rituals. A proud recipient of the academic degree Vidya Ratna, Jewel of Learning. He had established a small school with about a dozen students. Right? So the older brother is the zamindar, runs the whole household affairs. The younger brother then is a pundit who runs a school. So you get the idea that previously they must have had a much bigger school and everything. So that's therefore the land. One day a rumor circulated in Shantipur that Kalidas Lahiri had donned the renounced attire of a Vaishnava. Disturbed and ashamed by these rumors, right? Our father took sannyas. What do you mean? We're gross materialists. Right? Disturbed and ashamed by these rumors, the two brothers consulted with their mother and decided that Devidas would go to Godrum and convince their father to come back. Why the younger one? Yeah, because he's the nyayist, right? He knows all the logic. Well, the older brother knows how to manage it, but it would only be sentiment that he... Though he's also very educated, but the father is quite educated. So then better to send the younger one. Plus, then the younger one can spend the time while the older one can still manage the, all the affairs and stuff like that. Devidas was to be accompanied by Shambhunath, who was known to be their father's favorite because he had served Lahiri Mahashaya satisfactorily for quite some time. Right? So here, somebody who you like and somebody that knows the logic and argument, right? You know, this is the team, right? You know? That's how you work it out. So you can get him by intelligence or emotion, one or the other, whichever works, you know, like that.
Preaching.
Yes, preaching. Yeah. Very, very clever. A servant was immediately sent in advance to Godrum to rent lodgings in a brahmana's house. Right? So they managed everything. They didn't just show up and start looking around. So. The next day, Devidas and Shambhunath started for Godrum. Upon reaching their temporary residence in Godrum, they alighted from their palanquin and sent off the bearers, but retained a Brahmin cook and two servants. Like that. Yeah, it's just a small trap.
Nice.
Yeah, small. Like that. When we were reading that when the king, you know, the king, queen, princess, like of the Kuch Bihar, up, you know, up north, it's in northern Bengal, when they would go traveling, they would have I think they would have two bogies. Like, you know, complete train bogies. One was for them, you know, the family, and the other one is for all their stuff and the servants, you know. Like that, and there may have even been more, but whatever it is, you know, they traveled like that. There was a large amount of stuff went, you know, so it's not like nowadays you get 20 kilos or 30 kilos. There, you're talking about 3,000 kilos or, you know, like that. At dusk, Devidas and Shambhunath walked to Prajumna Kunj. Upon their arrival, they saw Lahiri Mahashai seated upon a mat of leaves on the Surabhi Terrace in the middle of the wide open courtyard. Right? Because it's natural, wherever you're living, there's an open courtyard in the middle. That's standard vastu. One is that you're there and then you can do everything in the middle. So all the rooms and that go off that middle. So, you know, maybe that's the basis of the kind of American construct where you have the living room and all the rooms off of it. But it's supposed to be a courtyard, not a living room. Yeah, okay. 12 bright tilak markings decorated its body, and he was chanting on beads with his eyes shut. After quietly approaching and climbing onto the platform, Shambhunath and Devidas prostrated themselves before him in respect. Right, because he's the father, right? Plus, he's living as a sadhu, so, you know, from both angles. Startled, Lahiri Mahashai opened his eyes and recognized them, said, "Ah, it is you, Shambhu. What brings you here, and how are you, Devi?" They replied respectfully that thanks to his blessings, they were both well. Lahiri Mahashai inquired about their lunch, but they had already eaten. Right. So, you know, if they're comfortable, everything's arranged, things like that. At that moment, loud chanting of Hari Nam was heard from Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji cottage in the area of Sri Madhava Malati Mandap. Vaishnav Das Babaji came out of his cottage and asked Lahiri Mahashai about the reason for the loud chanting. Both of them went to investigate and found that many visiting Vaishnavas were circumambulating Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji whilst loudly chanting. Vaishnav Das and Lahiri also joined the group, and after offering prostrated obeisances to Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji, all the Vaishnavas sat down upon the Sri Madhava Malati Mandap. Devidas and Shambhunath sidled to the back of the assembly and sat down, like crows among swans. You know, because they're Brahmins, but they're not using it appropriately. Right? So that's the point, is that neither was Lahiri or neither was Vaishnav Das. But that window of opportunity came of Vaishnav association, where then they took up the actual purpose of their Brahminical practice. And then they got the benefit. So the same way as now this Devidas and Shambhunath, now if they take it up, if they appreciate it, then they would also be in the same position. Right? But if they don't, then crows among swans, yes. After performing a static kirtan for a long time, the spiritual assembly dispersed at midnight. The Vaishnavas returning to their individual dwellings. Devidas and Shambhunath took leave of their father, Lahiri Mahashai, and returned to their home. So I guess ecstatic kirtan is pretty common that it goes to midnight. I mean, that's what I've noticed when these, you know, big kirtaniers, when they have the opportunity, they always take it to 11, 12, 1 o'clock. You know? The next day after lunch, Devidas and Shambhunath went back to the cottage of Lahiri Mahashai, offered him respectful obeisances, and sat down. Right? Now, one would think, no, the morning is when you should do that. No, that's when you do occupational work. The morning is for the occupational. It means early morning is for your sadhana and all that. Then after that, that's when occupational work is done. The afternoon, after lunch, after you've rested, that's the time for just ordinary kind of business. Does that make sense? So, being Brahmins, that's when they take care of their business. Because for Brahmins, in the morning, then they're dealing with their sadhana, their teaching, you know, other things like that. So the afternoon is when they take care of, you know, normal day-to-day business, right? Well, businessmen will work in the morning. Kshatriya also, he does his occupational things in the morning. And then, you know, these kind of general things like checking, you know, the stables, checking the army, checking the armory, the granaries, all these things he does in the afternoon. So the management's in the morning of your occupation. And then your general kind of like maintenance of the scene is done in the afternoon, right? So the Brahmins means it's studying and teaching in the morning. Kshatriyas, it's running court in the morning. And Vaishyas would be running business, right? Does that make sense? Because the afternoon means you've taken care of all major things. So the afternoon, that's that gap when you can take care of these side things. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right, it's not that they slept in late and, you know, played a few video games and thought, okay, now let's go see the father like that. No, it's just this is just the normal way the culture works. The next day after lunch, Devidas and Shambhunath went back to the cottage of Lahiri Mahashai, offered him respectful obeisances, and sat down. Devidas spoke to his father. Father, I have a request. Please return to our Shantipur house. Here you are facing many hardships, whereas at home we can all serve you with pleasure. If you permit, we can even add a quiet and separate wing to our house. Right? means it's standard, means in your pious families, this is the, means the first option is give up this nonsense and just come home and be like you always have been. And if that doesn't work, then the second option is this. Is that, okay, you know, you come home, you do everything you're doing now, you do it at home. We won't bother you. We'll even give you your own separate place, everything like this, right? So I've heard this many, many times, families, when they're trying to convince, you know, their children to come home and everything like that. This is the next option.
So if they do come home, then you can work on them there?
Yeah, because of course, when they're there, you can work on them there. But if they're away, how do you work? Yeah, because exactly. You're cultured. You don't go there and yell and scream and this and that. You know, you they go home first. Like that. Or even that, if they don't mind, if it's something they can adjust with, okay, it's a bit strange, but at least it's at home. You know, so then the locals aren't going to complain that, oh, you're, you know, oh my God, your father took sannyas. Oh no. You know, like that kind of stuff. You know. Yes.
I think Giriraj Maharaj relates something like that in his book, Watering the Sea.
Yeah.
His parents came to Mumbai.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, his father came and gave him a blank check, I think, you know, just said, you know, come on home, you know. Like that. That he didn't take, he just gave the check back, so. That's where Prabhupada, you know, had that special, gave special attention in that to Giriraj Maharaj, because it was, I mean, it wasn't his father's, just little rich, really rich, you know, so you're talking millions and millions then, you know, and that's back in the 70s, so that's a lot of money, you know, a million now is, you know, a good amount, but not that much, but then a million was very, very big amount of money. So he left that to just stay in simple in Bombay, and, you know, I remember I went out with him once for doing the life membership, you know. So you have the membership maker, and then you have the assistant, right? So the assistant means you carry the bags, right? You know, have all the books in it, the briefcases, and the presentations, and all that. So somehow or another, my shoes had either broken or, you know, shoes means, you know, those Hawaii chapels, the flip-flops, right? And so broken or got lost or something. And so then I asked him if he could, you know, give some money for, you know, getting some new shoes when we went out. And so then, but somehow or another, he didn't think that was the right arrangement because we were going out, this and that. So he gave me his shoes, like that. So I had the shoes, and he's walking barefoot through Bombay, right, you know. And Bombay's, I mean, now it's not as much. It's a little different than this side. This side, the streets are, I mean, other than the dust and dirt, the street itself is clean. But in Bombay in those days, they weren't, because everyone chewed this pan or this masala, and they would spit all over the streets. So you'd have to be really careful where you walked. It was just like, you know, it was just like covered. Like that.
When you wash your feet, you have to wash the soap afterwards.
yeah, like that. Okay. Okay. So if you permit, we can even add a quiet and separate wing to our house. So in other words, we'll set you up so you can do all your Babaji stuff at, you know, home, you know, like that. The Hari Mahashaya reply, it sounds good. But here I have Sandhi Association. It means it's a nice arrangement, you know, like that. So they're considering like that, it's good. So you can see here is that when we're dealing with the human element, those human needs are very much part of it.
Yeah.
You know, do you have a place to stay? Do you have lunch? You know, are things going nicely? We may think that those are trivial, you know, especially when you have, you know, big contracts and big things to get accomplished. But the real point is how are people, are they comfortable? Because the point is you make money to be comfortable. So therefore, when somebody's there, you see that they're comfortable, right? But here I have saintly association, which is difficult to find in Shantipur, right? Because there they're all nice high-grade Brahmins, but they're all logicians and grammarians and, you know, and ritualistic and all this, and basically not devotees, right? You know, and by the name, Devidas, what does that mean? You know, they're not thinking, you know, Radha Devi Dasi. They're meaning, you know, Maya Devi. Yeah, you understand? So they're all smartas. So it's not good association for Vaishnavas. In addition, as you also know, the people of Shantipur are atheistic and love to criticize others. And this is 500 years ago. So this is just the way it's been. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Shantipur is famous for fine cloth and Vaishnav aparad. Oh, they are so smooth. They are good. We were there once for... Oh, we were there. I think it was the boat program. And that, so we were doing Harinam. And just some guy, you know, Brahmin guy comes up, and, you know, we're dressed in saffron. He just comes up and, so, you're Upagurvana or Naishtika Brahmacharya, you know? Like that, you know, it's technical, you know, stuff, you know? Like that, and says, you know, well, you know, we're not Naishtika, but the point is, so then you're studying. So basically, he wants to point out that we're not Brahmacharis at all. He's doing it so smoothly, you know, using Sanskrit things and going through the things very nicely and all that, and like that. Atmatattva also said when they were there on the bullock cart party, that very, very early, I think the first years it was there, when they go through Shantipur, they would harass him like anything. It's just like, you know, you just don't want to go to Shantipur. Like that. And such that Ganga used to be, because Advaitacharya's house, where his house is, you know, when you go on that bypass, and kind of like partway down the bypass, it has the sign for Advaitapat. So the Ganga used to flow there. You can see it, his house, it goes and it just drops off. So where it drops off, that's where the Ganges was. From there, she's moved basically, you know, some kilometers away. Just so that all these offensive Brahmins wouldn't come and take bath, right? Only the more sincere ones would walk that far to go take bath. Right, you know, so like that. Even she just thought, okay, enough's enough. Moved away. Therefore, yeah, and they love to criticize. That's what I was saying. It wasn't that they're there and just, you know, coming in and have, like, they'd love to do it. So they do it with such finesse, you know, and all this and that, you know, all these nice things. You don't even know you're being insulted. Therefore, it's not exactly a peaceful place to live. Indeed, many Brahmana families reside there. But by mixing closely with the weaver community, their intelligence has become infected with guile and cunning. Right, because that's where the best Bengali cloth comes from there. Your best dhotis, everything like that. Devotees don't use them so much now. as before. But they're the ones that got borders about this wide. All these lines and everything and variety of things like that. I even saw one where the border doesn't stop. You know, thicker it goes, and then there's lines, and it just goes until it reaches the other side of the dhoti, you know, like that, yeah. So by mixing with them and probably being involved in business and all that, then the mentality, you know, they picked up this guile and cunning, you know, like that. That way we get from the weavers, like that. Because the weavers are, you know, how to cheat on the cloth and everything like that. Fine garments, grandiose words, and blasphemy of Vaishnavas are the three characteristics of the people of Shantipur. You should therefore grant that I stay here in Godrum. That is my desire, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's Shantipur. Devidas spoke warily. Dear father, what you have said is true, right? Because you can't say it's not true. He's just saying the facts, right? Mm-hmm. However, why do you have to communicate at all with the Shantipur residents? In the tranquility of your separate quarters, you could pass your days in prayer and meditation whilst pursuing your spiritual search. The daily rituals and rites of a Brahmin, such as Sandhya Bandana, are Nitya Dharma, and to become immersed in such performances is expected of a great soul like yourself, right? So now we're going to get this overlap, this overlay of words of Nitya Naimittik, right? So here that the discussion, okay, we had it a few days early, but, you know, here this is the time where it comes in this treatise, is that there's the confusion because the same word is used for both, right? It means what is regularly done and what's occasionally done, right? So nitya means what's regular. So then for devotee, it's serving Krishna, right? And occasionally you do out of the ordinary service to Krishna, right? But for the Brahmins, then they do all their selected rituals daily, and then they have their occasional rituals. So, but they're not catching that real nitya is eternal, while the other nitya is temporary. As long as they're in the Brahmin body, they're performing those. But if they become one of these weavers, they're not doing it. Lahiri Maharshi said patiently, "My son, those times are of the past. Having stayed in the company of saintly devotees for a few months, and after having received spiritual instructions from my guru, my attitudes and opinions have irreversibly changed. What you call nitya dharma, I call naimittic dharma," because we're saying eternal meaning spiritual, naimittic meaning material, right? So his point of nitya is a detail within naimittic. Right? Naimittic can be in nitya and naimittic. But nitya means it's always service to Krishna. It's transcendental. It's the nature of the soul. So even the occasional activities are still on the platform of transcendental. Devotional service to the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari, is the only nitya dharma of the soul. Sandhya Bandhana, etc., are factually naimittika dharma. Right. So here they're taking Sandhya Bandhana as the whole ritual. They're not even putting the emphasis on the chanting of the Gayatri itself, though that's, of course, included. But what they're worried is that he may be chanting only the Gayatri and not doing all the ritual where you're invoking the Gayatri and the purification of the self and all this. It takes about 10 minutes. You know, we have enough problem working in 3 minutes to chant the Gayatri, let alone add on top of that 10 minutes. Right? You know, that's each time. Well, noontime, you don't have to use it. But morning and evening, you use that. That's why sometimes it's confusing that they talk Sandhya Bandhana of 2 times a day, but they're chanting the Gayatri 3 times. So that means the noon one, they're not doing the Sandhya Bandhana. Right? Because generally, it's in the middle of the day, there's activities happening, you're taking a bath before lunch, or you know, whatever it is you're doing. So it always becomes difficult to work it in. So it's only worked in morning and evening. It's not that it needs to be worked in, it's just that's the way the arrangement is. Devidas retorted, "Father, I have not come across any scriptures supporting your views. Are Sandhya Bandhana, etc., not a part of Hari Bhajan?" Right? Because remember before he was describing that devotional service, there's two kinds. That which is endeavoring for pure love of Krishna in the four main relationships, and that which is using devotional service for fruitive work or devotional service for jnana, Right? It means you want liberation from your devotional service, or you want piety, elevation of the heavenly planets. Right? So they use the form of devotional service, but technically they're not really devotional service. Right? Yes.
You mentioned once in Brahmachari who said he was very pucky, but he went.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, he was so pucky. He would dress very simply, wouldn't take care of himself, you know, really, really. But and he was always active. So what it means, anytime he'd do anything, and he'd do everything by he'd just walk everywhere, like that. You give him money for a taxi, he wouldn't use it. He'd walk. You know, he'd keep it, and then, you know, if his shoes ran out, he'd buy that or something like that. So very, very austere. Eat very simply, you know, never into sense gratification, anything, never associating with the women, anything like that. And so, you know, one discussion, some brahmacharis were talking with him about, what the goal and everything of life, you know, Pema and this and that. He says, yeah, that's good, you know, like that. But, you know, so they were asking, you know, why is he so austere and why is he doing all this? Because he doesn't really need to be. And he mentioned that he wants to go to the heavenly planets. You know, oh no, how it started was, they asked him, says, you're not planning to get married or anything? No, I'm not getting married. You know, not here, you know, it's like that. So he says, so then, what's your idea? He says, go to the heavenly planets, he says. Now that's the place to get married. So that was his idea, you know. You know, so he says, you know, we're not getting involved in anything here. We'll wait till there. So, and he chanted his rounds, did everything very nicely, like that. So yeah, so it was. But here it was also, there is the element, the devotional, the association, so it's different here than the smartest. He's just, you know, following that Bhagavatam verse that even if you have material desires, go to Krishna for it. Mm-hmm. It's just a waste of time. Then you have to spend time there, and then, you know, and then from there, then, you know, proceed, you know. So it's slower. Are Sandhya Bandhan, etc., not part of Hari Bhajan? If they are, they are definitely Nitya Dharma. Is there a distinction between Sandhya Bandhana and the Vaidhi Bhakti process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, and so on? Right? So he knows all these things. They've read the scriptures, so they know everything. Just like you see the demons. When they talk, Kamsa, I was just reading yesterday, he's talking all this philosophy, right? After he tries to kill Yoga Maya, and she says, you know, that's not going to happen. Right? It's not possible. He's preaching to Vyasadeva. You know, about how, you know, it's not actually my position, but, you know, actually, because we're not the body, we're this, that, and so on. Very nice, perfect philosophy, right? But they only use it when they want to use it for benefit, right? But he knows the philosophy. So here, these smartas, they know all the philosophy. They know all the different things. They just don't understand it. They don't understand how devotional service is superior. Lahiri Mahi, yes.
Is it because of lack of realization?
Yeah, I mean, well, just no association. Mm-hmm. Means it's just like milk will sit there all day, but it's not going to turn into yogurt. But you put one drop of yogurt, it'll turn into yogurt. Does that make sense? Okay, you leave it overnight, and then the next day it'll turn into mozzarella. Okay, but it's still not yogurt.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Lahiri Mahashai, Sandhya Bandhan, etc., are part of Karmakanda portion of the Vedas, which deals with rituals meant for fruitive results, and so are very different from Vaidhi Bhakti. Right? Vaidhi is not interested in fruitive results. The Karmakanda is. That's what it's specifically meant for. How to perform rituals that you improve your piety, that you get material benefit. The Karmakanda recommends the practice of Sandhya Bandhan, etc., for the attainment of mukti. In contrast, devotion to the Lord through Shravanam, Kirtanam, and so on is performed without any ulterior motive. Right? You're not chanting because you're going to get some benefit. You're chanting it pleases Krishna. It's a natural position. While all these others, you're doing it because you'll get some material benefit. The descriptions in the scriptures you have read regarding the results of Shravanam Kirtan are merely written to arouse spiritual interest in materialistic men. Right? So in other words, by doing these things, you'll get so much benefit. Like you see, it's like we don't put much emphasis on it, but there is, the Gaudiya Mat did compile a book on Ekadasi. where it's taking from the Puranas, where it shows all the benefits that people have gotten from following it. Right? It means somebody got moksha, somebody got a kingdom, somebody got this. So the idea is those who are materialistic, who are not going to follow Ekadasi, they'll at least follow Ekadasi because of the idea I'll get material benefit from it. So actually the point of following Ekadasi, it pleases Krishna. So at least they're doing the activity, though they don't have the mentality. Does that make sense? Because many times it's easier to get people to follow the form rather than the essence, right? Because forms everybody sees and relates to. The essence, which is Krishna, that they don't catch. So you start, it means first you give the essence, and if they catch it, then that's better. But if they don't, then you start with the forms. But that's called the slow path, right? The quick path is take Krishna first, and understand the forms are connected to Krishna. But if you take the forms, you may or may not appreciate their connection to Krishna. Or it's okay, it's connected, but you're not really worried about it. You're worried about the forms. So that's why it's slow. So many, many, many lifetimes it takes to progress on this path. The aim, the principal aim of Vaidhi Bhakti is to develop attachment in the heart of the neophyte for Hari Bhakti. Right? That's what we're trying to do. So attachment, that's an advanced principle. But you're trying to establish that in the heart of the neophyte. Because the neophyte sees the forms, so he follows the forms. I'm following ritual. Right? As a Brahmin, I follow ritual. So now I take up the devotional elements. And much of the time, they're the same thing. But now, okay, to please the Lord. Or if there's a religious, you know, some other form of religious. But one follows ritual. If not, one has one's daily ritual one does to become happy anyway. So now this is another ritual. So that's it's seen as therefore a change in life. But it's not, it's a change in mentality. Right? Because what you're adding is the nitya. That's what's actually different. But otherwise, if you're doing the Brahminical or you're doing, you know, some other world religion or you're just a, you know, total sense enjoyer, you have your ritual. Right? You know, it's not that sometimes he goes to the nightclub at 6 o'clock in the evening. No, he only goes at 11 o'clock at night. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise you have to wait there for 4 hours for people to get enough drunk to be able to, you know, to work. You know, so that's why you go later. You know, so he has his ritual. He has his functions, how he works, where he goes, how he dresses, the whole thing like this. But the point is you're just switching form for form. Right? So that's why we'll say, oh, it's a totally different, it's not actually totally different. You're switching external for external. But the point is the Vaidhi Bhakti, its externals are in line with the practices of those who has this devotion. That's why that's considered the topmost. Right? That's why those are the activities of the Brahman. Right? So the ritual of Brahmanism are the highest rituals or forms you can use. But the point is the mentality of Brahman is to know Brahman. So if they don't know Brahman, then that's not actually the real use of the Brahminical activities. Right? So the devotee is taking up the Brahminical activities only because they're the best for invoking devotion. Right? Does that make sense? Not because they're more in the mode of goodness or this or that. No, it's because they invoke devotion. That's why we're not worried about the mode of goodness either. Just the mode of goodness. There's recommended activities in the mode of goodness that invoke devotion, right? In proper association. That's why we're interested. Does this make sense? That's why it becomes confusing. No, but what are we supposed to do? Yeah, what we're supposed to do is remember Krishna. Does that make sense? Because we're so used to form, right? So because of that, he's taking these different forms as completely different. But actually, it's all these forms, they're not so much different. What's different is that it's being done for Krishna. That's what makes it nitya. Right? You know, it's like probably gives the example, wet cow dung and dry cow dung. You know, one thinks of them as very different, but they're both cow dung. Devidas, then you admit that the process of bhajan gives rise to gona, secondary results. Right? This is also a technique, and here is that. Okay, you said that. So you admit this then. Mm-hmm. You know, because you want to now make that your point. You know, so that's a natural technique then. Mm. The Hirimashai. The achievement is secondary results. Right? In other words, you follow bhajan, you get secondary results. The devotee is not worried about the secondary results. He's only worried in pleasing Krishna. That just comes automatically. Right? But for the here in this case, the smarta, they're actually performing the primary activities to get the secondary results. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the difference. The achievement, the Hirimashai, the achievement of secondary results depends entirely upon the motivation of the sadhaka. A Vaishnava practices sadhana bhakti for the sole purpose of coming to the perfect state of devotion known as siddha bhakti. A non-Vaishnav utilizes the process of sadhana bhakti to achieve two goals, bhukti and mukti. Bhukti meaning sense gratification. In these two instances, one may not detect any apparent difference in the external practice of sadhana bhakti, but the main distinction is in the motive. So that means three persons are performing sadhana bhakti, one for the desire to develop prema, one for liberation, and one material facility. But you can't really tell the difference in the external practice. Right? So that, yeah, does that make sense? So the primary is only actually achieved if you are doing it for devotion. The secondary will come automatically. Like that. You don't have to focus on it to get it. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say you put some fruit or some vegetables into the juicer. You don't have to separately endeavor to get the pulp. It comes automatically. Right? You worry about getting the juice, the pulp comes. So you worry about the devotion, the material stuff comes. Right? But we don't like to think the material is just pulp, you know, just stuff you throw out, or, you know, the cows eat it, you know, like that. So somebody said, no, that's the substance. No, that's not actually the substance. Right? That's the dry part. Yeah. When one worships Krishna through the path of karma, the mind is purified and one may attain material fruits, freedom of
disease.
Oh, disease. Is that disease? Or freedom of deceasing, meaning freedom from death?
No, I guess it's freedom of this material disease, desire and liberation.
Oh, okay. Free from disease or liberation. Of disease or liberation. So, because material fruits, freedom of disease could be, or liberation. Material fruits, you're getting benefit, or you're removing things that aren't desirable, or you're getting completely free from the material entanglement. But the same worship of Krishna through the path of bhakti produces only prema. When karmis observe ekadasi, it eradicates their sins. When devotees observe ekadasi, it enhances their hari bhakti. Right? So we're not worried about getting rid of the sins, we're worried about developing the bhakti. Does that make sense? That's the difference. The subtle difference between sadhana performed as an aspect of karma and sadhana performed as an aspect of bhakti may be known only by the mercy of Bhagavan. So it's only by the Lord's grace you can understand this. Because what you're understanding by understanding bhakti is Krishna. So he's in control of whether that's there. So you please him through serving the Vaishnavas, then you understand. You don't, you won't. Okay. There are two types of men in the world. Those who are spiritually awake and those who are spiritually unconscious. The Shastras appraise secondary results for the benefit of those who are spiritually unconscious and who do not perform any pious activity unless they visualize a forthcoming result. In other words, they won't be pious just because that's what you're supposed to do. They'll only be pious because they get a result. So those who are spiritually asleep, secondary results are recommended because they can see the result. They're asleep because they're only seeing forms, and so by being pious, they'll get better quality of forms. Mm-hmm. Right? So it keeps them on the progressive path. doesn't mean that they're necessarily progressing, but they're on the progressive path. Right? Because if you can wake them up, they're already on the progressive path. Right? Otherwise, if you're awake and on a non-progressive path, it's not as ideal. Right? However, the Shastras do not intend such people to remain satisfied with secondary results. Rather, their attraction to secondary results should induce them to perform virtuous acts, which will hasten their contacts with sadhus. Right? Because all pious things require sadhus and brahmins. Right? You're given charity, it's to brahmins. You do a sacrifice, it's with brahmins. You hear the scriptures, it's with brahmins. Right? The king is going to manage the kingdom, he needs brahmins. Does that make sense? Right? The Vaishya is either giving charity to brahmins, or if he's big like a zamindar, then he has brahmins that come and give advice. So in any case, you're always associated with brahmins, with the idea that if you're fortunate, that brahmin will be a Vaishnav. If you're not, then he's from Shantipur and, you know, nice guy, but hey, you know. So, yeah. So that's the idea of virtuous acts, is it therefore puts you in contact with sadhus. So sadhu sangha is the real thing, right? We'll take it, no, the activity is because that gives you the naimittic result. The naimittic activity gives the naimittic result. The actual point is association of Vaishnavas, which gives the nitya result. Does that make sense? So even when we consider pious activities, oh, why do we do that? We're only interested in the spirits. No, because it creates sadhu sangha. So we're interested in sadhu. Otherwise, how do you get sadhu sangha? Okay, when you go to the temple, they're there. But outside of that, you invite them to lunch, you have a samskar, a program, or something like that. Then you get the association. Does that make sense? So the idea is to get the association. So the pious activities create the opportunity of that association. Then, by the mercy of sadhus, they will come to know of the primary results of Hari Bhajan, and taste for those results will awaken within them. Right? So they're performing sadhana bhakti because it gets them material results, but it still puts them in contact with sadhus. By the mercy of sadhus, they may hear about the actual primary reason for performing sadhana bhakti and become attracted by that. You understand this process? So that's why it's there. So when we're talking about Vedic, we're simply saying that it creates more of association with sadhus, with brahmins. Right? Does that make sense? Means if you're dealing with, let's say, Ayurveda, okay, who's the Ayurvedic doctor?
Brahmana.
A brahmana, right? He's not doing it as business. Means there are those who do it as business, but they're not the ones you're trying to associate with. So what might you hear when they discuss? Right, Krishna Katha, discussions about sadhana, because in Ayurveda, then you're how you say, Nitya, Dinacharya, means what you do on a daily basis, or Ritucharya, what you do according to the seasons. It's all according to sadhana. Right, it's just the medical benefits you get from the sadhana. You get up early, you get this, you know, this material benefit. You take bath in the morning, you get this benefit. It's a cold bath, you get these benefits. Right, you do the fire yoga, you get these benefits. All these different things are there, so a discussion will be there. So if he's actually a devotee, he'll discuss something about that, like Murari Gupta. Right, so they would be physically cured. The naimittika would be dealt with, and the nitya, right? An astrologer, what's he supposed to be?
Brahman.
Also Brahman. So then he'll discuss it in connection with Krishna consciousness, right? Does that make sense? If you're doing the Vedic rituals, who does that? Brahman. Okay. So then the ritual, why it's being done, it's actual connection to Krishna, right? You're learning the language, the Sanskrit and this. What are you going to discuss?
Krishna,
right? Because the Shastras, it's all about that. But he may know about Krishna, so he'll explain it to you that way. Right? The Veda, you're learning the Veda. Same thing. Does that make sense? The histories. So much history is there, you can bring out so many aspects. But the Vaishnava will bring out the devotional aspect, like Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? Logic is there. Right? So they'll use the logic to establish the philosophy. Right? Philosophy is there. That's so you can understand actually what's God consciousness? You understand? Well, we've covered all the branches of Vedic knowledge. So all of them are done in the association of Brahmas.
Vastu?
Vastu, it's part of the astrological.
Oh, okay.
The astrological or Stapana Veda. You know, because your layout of your house, your city, like that, but it has to be based on Shastra. But it's according to astrology.
So like city planning would be consulted by Brahmas?
Yeah, those who would know it. I mean, people make a business out of all these things. Yeah. So, you know, you can do that. But that's not actually what it's for. But even if you're doing it at a business, then if you're sincere, you'll bump into somebody who's not doing it as business.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Devidas. In some scriptures, one reads only about the Gona results without any mention of the Mukhya results. How may this be explained? Right? So he's understood as that he's saying, because Mukhya is the primary, Gona is the secondary. Okay? So Lahiri Mahashaya is saying that bhakti is the Mukhya, or the primary. Mm. And the material benefits from the karmakanda or mukti, or liberation, that is secondary. That's the naimittic, right? That's the gona. Yeah. So gona, naimittic are the same thing. And mukhya and nitya are the, you know, they're just different ways to refer to it. Right? One is bringing out the eternal aspect and the occasional. One is bringing out the primary and the secondary. Does that make sense? What you do regularly, that's the primary. What you do occasionally, that's secondary. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so that's Mukhya and Gona.
Gona
is secondary. Yeah, Mukhya is primary. Because Mukhya means the main, what gives the actual results. You know, or the face, you could say Mukhya meaning the face, you know, so that's the primary thing. Like that. So he's saying that some scriptures only talk about Gona results. They don't mention the Mukhya. Now we know that they do mention, but it may be so, hidden, right? Like, let's say you have the Skanda Purana. I think that's one of the biggest, 100,000 verses. But there's only, I think, one or maybe one to three verses that the Acharyas quote from that whole Purana. Out of 100,000 verses, there's two or three that they use to quote to establish, you know, the Vaishnava Dharma. So that means primarily it's talking Gona. Right? Well, Bhagavatam, you have thousands of verses you can quote. Because it's primarily Mukhya. Does that make sense? Yeah. Lahiri Mahashaya. The scriptures can be grouped into three categories, which correspond to the three levels of human consciousness. Sattvika scriptures in Sattvagun, the mode of goodness for people in the Sattvagun. Rajasika scriptures in Rajagun, the mode of passion for people in Rajagun, and Tamasika scriptures in Tamagun, the mode of ignorance for people in Tamagun. Right? It's not that the scriptures themselves are in that, it's the language and presentation and examples will attract the minds of someone in that mode. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, an example is maybe it was some years back. What was it? It's a problem now with what some years means. Some years means 5, 10, 15, like that. Before, some years meant one or two.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with the story of, you know, Tulsi and Shaligram, how Tulsi got, you know, cursed. You know, I mean, Vrinda got cursed as Tulsi and Vishnu as Shaligram. Right? We've heard that story. You know, it became popular some years back. So I'm not sure how many some years back. We were hearing about it in the mid-90s. So I'm not sure when it got to wherever you were.
90s.
Yeah, generally in the 90s. Okay, so that was it. It was the popular thing. Because the idea of devotees are, you know, getting into all variety of the stories, and so they were looking everywhere and finding nice stories. But ever notice that the story somehow or another doesn't carry the same flavor as what we're used to hearing about in stories? Right? It means, you know, the cursing and all the different fightings and all those things. Was that noted or it's been too long? Right? That's because it comes from a Rajasic scripture. Mm. Right? That's from the, what's it called? Brahmanda Purana, I think, which is in the Rajagun. So it's telling the story from that aspect, where the elements for gossip and all those those would be the primary things. So it's written so someone would be interested in that story and remembering that story. Though who there are they remembering? Vishnu and Vrinda Devi and Tulsi Devi. Right? So they're remembering transcendental personalities, but why? Because of the element of that gossip. Does that make sense? So that's how the Rajasic scriptures work. Right? Bhagavatam telling the story wouldn't tell it that way. It'd tell the same stories, but the facts it would emphasize would be different. Right? Or Tamasic, you have also in one of those, maybe it's Linga or that, then it's telling the story of the that battle of the demigods and the demons, and then Lord Shiva's on the battlefield, I think it's Banasur, and that and he's fighting with Krishna, and Krishna sends the sleep weapon, and so Shiva gets so tired that he yawns, and he leaves the battlefield and goes to sleep, right? That's the full story, right? But this other Purana, this Tamasic Purana, because it's trying to present Shiva as supreme, right? So then, or it's presented for those who see Shiva as supreme that they could come to that conclusion. It's not establishing, it just makes it you could come up with that conclusion. So then, it says then Krishna fired a weapon at Shiva. It doesn't say what weapon, right? Because he did fire a weapon. But he happened to fire a sleep weapon. Yes. But they leave out the sleep part and just say a weapon. And Lord Shiva, he just, you know, after it was fired, he just yawned and left the battlefield. So the conclusion is, oh, this is so small time, I'm not even going to stick around for this. So then you think, oh yeah, Shiva's supreme, see? Here, you know, does that make sense? So that's how they work. They only present what facts will bring out attract that mode. But Bhagavatam then gives all of that because that gives the elements that attracts those in the mode of pure goodness. But other details it doesn't get into. Like that. You know, in Bhagavatam they'll say, the sage was there, he was very attracted by the girl's beauty, and then this happened and moved on. So you got one verse. Well, Mahabharat, it'll get right into the detail. He was there and he saw her and he was so struck and this and that and on and on and on like that. Does that make sense? So it just attracts that particular... Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what it means by the Shastra's scriptures in Rajagun. The scripture itself is not Rajagun, but it's written from the perspective of Rajagun, so those in that mode will be attracted. The idea is everybody should be following scripture. Mm-hmm. Right? Even the Tamasic person should be following the authority of scripture. Because by association... He can switch from the mode of ignorance to goodness to pure goodness. You know? Or ignorance to passion to goodness. Or whatever it takes.
It means that all the scriptures have that quality to attract any type of person.
Yes. Yes, yes. But you'll find certain ones are written in a specific way, but still even there they deal with like Ayurveda deals with, means sattvic medicine, is herbs. Rajasic is minerals. Right? So there's a branch of Ayurveda called Siddha Ayurveda or Siddha Vaidya. And that what they do is everything is metals and minerals. They're these little dinky pills, very powerful. You know? That's what I said. So they're meant for, you know, very strong, like Kshatriyas and that, they would use it because it's so big and powerful. They could use the others, but a lot of times it's like if it's made out of some grass and some leaves, but this is made out of gold and this and that. And, you know, okay, you know, kings, yeah, that's for me. You know, like that. So therefore, the mode of passion is like, you know, like that. It's so small. You know, yeah, whatever it is. It's gold. Oh, okay. You know, so it's like, you know. So there's a branch that's just. Deals with the mode of passion medicine, right? Then there's also deals with the mode of ignorance. So they're all poisons and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know. Does that make sense? So you do have, even within it, though it's meant, it's practiced by someone in the mode of goodness, but it still accommodates the nature of the different modes.
Mm-hmm. Like that.
Okay. The sages who wrote the scriptures were perfect personalities. The methods employed by them in formulating the scriptures ensure that if anyone diligently and faithfully executes his specific duties as recommended in the scriptures, he progresses higher. Right? You must progress, but you're still progressing within Naimittic.
Mm.
But there are ideas that gradually come to the point where then you're in that pure state in the mode of goodness. When you come in contact with the devotees, they take it up. You know, so easily. It means you come in contact with the mode of ignorance, you also could take it up, but there's a good chance you won't, because in ignorance you can't tell what's what, and what's right, or what's wrong. Yes?
Would what you consider Naimittic and Nitya change as you progress?
Yes, you could say like that. It would be. It just means the elements within the Naimittic. It means you're dividing the Naimittic into regular and that. Let's say for the one person just only at the samskars, then he might do some aspects of Achman and other those aspects of sadhana. But as he progresses, then it becomes a daily. You know what I'm saying? The Vaishya should do, but he might not do. As long as he's doing his business and giving a charity, then he's okay. He's situated. But a Kshatriya, he's not a Kshatriya if he doesn't do that daily. Right? And also a Brahmin, he must do that daily. Does that make sense? So it's naturally means those. Yeah. Thus we find diversities in many scriptures. Nevertheless, unwavering faith in the scriptures ushers in all good fortune. The conclusion of all the scriptures is the Bhagavad Gita, which delineates this esoteric precept. Right? So he's not attacking that, oh, you're a smarta, you're just a nonsense.
Mm.
No, he says, good. So it elevates you to this platform. So you're at this point, which is so close.
Yes.
Right? So it's so much better than, let's say, another person who's not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the point is if you faithfully follow, you will always progress. You know, you always benefit. You always are elevated. So that's why any regulation, anything, will always help a person progress. Right? That's what you see. So now, of all the material, means all these varieties of scriptures, because here we're talking about the aparavidya, because he said some scriptures only talk about the gona. So that's going to be the aparavidya, means those that are not the philosophical. Right? Anything other than Upanishads, Vedanta. Right, the Mimamsa, all anything other than that, those are all material. So they'll emphasize the gona, but mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. So we're familiar with them from the mode of goodness, but they deal with all levels.
Right.
So if one has faith in that, he will progress. Right. But now, of all this, the essence of all these scriptures. Right, even also the philosophical, because the Mimamsa is there, is then given in Mahabharata. And in Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita is actually giving the essence of everything. So in the whole Mahabharata, the Gita is the essence, right? And that association between the devotees, the Lord and the devotees, that's your actual point. So 700 verses is kind of encased in 100,000 verses so people will read it. Right? You know, that's the idea. Devidas, I have been studying many different scriptures from my early years, but today, by your grace, I have understood a unique philosophical point. Right? Because he's been a smarta, so he's very well read. He's running a school, right? And he's not running a school just in, you know, New York. You put in some place on the internet and that, and so people, you know, come to you. He's in Shantipur. They're known as smartas. So these are your top Brahmins in Bengal. So he's a teacher in Shantipur. So he must be good when it comes to scriptures. So he's saying from a young age he's been studying, because he would have gone to Gurukul. So that means from 5, he's studying scriptures. Right? And he's a younger brother. The older brother's 35. So he's going to be something younger than that. But he's probably at least in his 20s, late 20s, even possibly even early 30s. So we're talking here 20, 25 years of studying scripture. And so he says, today, by the grace of his, not only he understood how this Mukhi and Gona works. Otherwise, before that, he did not understand. Okay. Lahiri Mahashaya. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.8.10, right, because he didn't quote Bhagavatam before this point. He said Gita. He gave a general description. He said Gita, because Gita he'll accept. Right? Because that's there. Gita is there. It's philosophical. Everybody accepts that. It's except for those who don't accept Smriti. They only accept Shruti. They don't worry about that. But then you discuss it as Upanishads. So it's not, there's no loss. But the point is basically, other than that very small group, then everybody accepts Bhagavad Gita. So that's something you do. Now, Bhagavatam, now that's another discussion. You know, whether they'll see that as well. But Gita is understood. It's a philosophical work. Some will appreciate Bhagavatam as such, some will not. But now that he said he's understood this, now you can quote Bhagavatam. Just as the honeybee takes nectar from all flowers, big and small, an intelligent human being should take the essence from all religious scriptures. So whatever you're reading, you see it in connection with the nitya in service to Krishna. You see it like that, then it becomes perfect. Right? Because they're all written for that purpose. In other words, they're written in that terminology for that particular group, but it's not that the message is exclusive to that group. You understand? This looks like, say, you take moral codes, how people should behave, how they have good qualities in that, but you put them in the form of stories for children. Right? That's so children can appreciate it. But the moral element, that adults can also. So if the adult is reading the story, it's not that they can't get this from it because it's in kids' language. They also take that. So the point is whatever scripture you're reading, you're able to appreciate what is the actual transcendental benefit. You know, what's the actual purpose? I remember, my son, I used to call you an atheist, but now I have stopped criticizing people. I used to call you an atheist, right? Let's just make that clear. But I don't do that anymore. No. No one should be faulted for adhering to the individual level of Adhikar. So in other words, he's an atheist because that's his level of Adhikar. He's following the Brahminical, but he's not seeing beyond. So he's only understanding Brahman. And even that is not complete, but still, it's Brahman. He's a Brahman, he understands Brahman, but he's not understanding Parabrahman. That makes him an atheist. You understand? When you understand Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, then you're a theist. Right? So if you accept the person, that's your good start. But even then, if they don't accept the, you accept the person, but not Brahman and Paramatma, still it's atheistic. You may not be an atheist, but your lack of appreciating those two things are atheistic. Does that make sense? God's not in control of the world, or things like that. That's atheistic. It doesn't mean you're an atheist, but it's atheistic. But here, they only understand Brahman. They don't know beyond that, so therefore, you can say they're an atheist. Like that. It's not a problem. They won't feel bad about it. You know, if you say an atheist is an atheist, he won't feel bad. Wow, you're such an atheist. I'll take that as a compliment. You know, it's like they won't see it bad. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yeah.
All right. Is it because of this perception that I see many devotees see nice people, yoga and new age?
Right,
right. Oh, they're good, but they don't see the
background. No. So they're nice people. So we don't criticize the position they're on, but we're trying to take them beyond that, show them what's the actual purpose of yoga and all these new agey things. Because the new agey things are basically just the Vedic literatures, you know, that are not connected to the Vedic literature. So the same thing is there, the Gona literatures that are meant for elevating one to Krishna consciousness. That's their actual purpose. So they're in a good position, right? They're more inclined towards the mode of goodness. Their dealings are better. The intellectual ability to look into something is better. So all these things are better, but at the same time is there's no use if you don't gain the actual nitya, the eternal purpose of it. So that's why one will preach according to their nature, but at the same time so they actually understand what it's meant for. That makes sense. So in this way, you don't criticize the person for his level. You may compare levels and show what's higher and lower, but someone's not criticized for being at a particular level. Like, you don't criticize a third grader that he's in third grade. Why isn't he in university? You know what I'm saying? It's just no, that's his adhikar. So therefore, it's good. Now, you know, you can say, you know, but why isn't he in university? He's only 8 years old. You know, okay, that's him, but what about his brother? He's still in third grade, yeah, so, but he's 15, you know. See, that's what I'm trying to say. There's just what is the level one's supposed to be at. So whatever that is, that's where he is. Now the idea is how to progress, get them to progress farther. Is that okay? Yeah. At the appropriate time, they will be promoted to higher levels. You are a pandit in Tarka Shastra. Tarka means argument. The scriptures of logic and Karma Shastra. The scriptures of fruitive work. Therefore, there is no offense in your level of realization, which is based upon these scriptures. So here's the broad-mindedness, right? So it's not that it's all the same. That's why it's broad-minded. No, it's broad-minded because you can accommodate everything and you don't have a problem with where it fits. You know, it's not that something's beginning and something's more advanced, therefore you have a problem. Broad-minded means you can accommodate the whole thing. Narrow-minded means you can only accommodate the position you're in.
Yes.
You know?
But he's still from Shantipur, you know. He's a little bit patronizing at the same time, right?
He is the father.
Yeah.
And his son is being stupid.
Yeah.
You know? But the thing is here they're just, because you also have to remember this is Brahmins. So for Brahmins speaking like this, it's not really considered patronizing. Because you're not talking about social, you're talking about knowledge.
Yeah,
Among Kshatriyas, Vaishya, Shudras, you'd call this patronizing.
Yeah.
But patronizing simply is you're stating the facts of the situation. Right? Like that. So amongst Brahmins, this is not really patronizing. Like that. Because he's saying is that you're at this level, because he's already admitted, he before this didn't say this. He's saying, now I understand there's higher points. So he's saying, so therefore, that's why, before I used to call you an atheist, but now I won't call you an atheist. Because the point is you're functioning at the level of your understanding. You're expert in karmakanda and logic. So that's all the more you're getting from that. But now you're starting to understand higher. So therefore, now we can... So for Brahmins, that's not, because they're not, that's the point, they're not so attached to the situation, they don't identify with the situation, right? That's what the others do, right? Because a Brahmin is not a situation, because it's not about situation, it's about his knowledge. But Kshatriya means there is a position of being a Kshatriya, but his situation is very much, he's got a big kingdom or a big army, big wealth, or he's very religious, or he's, you know, very powerful, or he's a great fighter, or, you know, something that goes with that. The situation is very important, right? The Vaishya is very important. You know what I'm saying? Means if you come to the best Brahmin in the world, and you come to his house, and it's some simple little place, you don't feel bad. But if you say, this is the most powerful man on the planet, and he has a simple little house, it's like, what's going on here? You know, you expect some big palace on some rock somewhere, you know? Like that, or if he's the richest man in the world, and you come in, it's just some little simple place, you know. Mm-hmm. You expect more. Does that make sense? Or if he's a big artist, you expect to walk in and there's art all over the place, and, you know, whatever it is. There's symptoms of his art everywhere. You know, you'll trip over it if you're not careful, right? You know. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. Devidas, earlier I held the false opinion that there are no pandits in the Vaishnava Sampradayas, right? Because they're not quoting Sri, they're just simply talking, you chant and develop love and this and that, which is the essence. But generally speaking, is you can understand these things without being a pandit. That's why it's superior to these other positions, right? The technicality of the Brahmanism is only to be appreciated by Brahmins, basically. Like that. Kshatriyas, high-grade Kshatriyas, high-grade Vaishyas can appreciate, can practice. Right? But just your general Brahmin, that would be his normal standard. Right? So then it's there, but you have to have that qualification. But devotional service doesn't require that. That's the advantage. Devotional service doesn't require. So because it doesn't require, then even a very simple person can take it up. So he has the faith. And he can give that faith to someone else who's interested. But if someone is attached to discussing philosophy from a very technical point of view, he may not appreciate the presentation that this simpler Vaishnav has made based on his faith. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Therefore, then your various kinds of preaching, because someone can deal, they know how to deal with in the criminal environment, so they can do prison preaching. Or they know how to deal in the yoga society, so they can do that new age preaching. Or they know how to deal with the college students, so they can do college preaching. Or they know how to deal with the teenagers, so they do the high school and junior high preaching. Does that make sense? Or they run, a weekend Sunday program for the kids. They know how to deal with the kids. Because it's you can't just put anybody there with the kids. It's someone who knows how to talk and deal with the kids. Does that make sense? It's like that? Or the person who is successful at running cooking classes. Does that make sense? So they have their ability and they can apply it there, so it'll attract that kind of person. But the general point of faith in Krishna doesn't require any of that. But if someone is situated, then that always helps. So that's why he's saying here, therefore there's no offense because everyone is at their level. So it's not that he's a pundit so that you have to talk to him like a pundit, so that's not good. No, he's a pundit, so you talk to him like a pundit. That's how he'll understand. And someone else is not a pundit, you talk to him simply. You talk like a pundit, they'll go, what was that? Is that... Okay. Earlier I held the false opinion that there are no pundits in the Vaishnav Sampradayas. I thought they were fanatics respecting only revelation and believing only in particular segments of the revealed scriptures. I am convinced now there are also broad-minded seekers of truth among the Vaishnavas. Are you presently studying the scriptures under a teacher? Right? Because he knows what his father knew. And of course, if his father before called him an atheist, that meant he was some variety of devotee. But as we see before, it was very much mixed. He was very proud of his position as a Brahmin, a knower of classical music, a knower of the scriptures. So, he felt very qualified, like the Goswamis. They're Brahmins, and much of the time qualified, but they're proud of their position of being born Brahmins and their knowledge of scriptures, their knowledge of the Gaudiya Vaishnavism, so then they can speak about these things and impress people. Right? So that's not a problem that they have that qualification. The problem is they're proud of it or thinks that's the qualification. The qualification is the devotion. So here's that revelation. So it wasn't the scriptures, just revelation. Because common people, especially we can see at this time, the Sahajiyas were prominent. And so they don't care about scriptures. They don't care about any of this. So they give a bad name to actually Vaishnavism. Because your greatest scholars are within the Vaishnav line because you have the broadest philosophy. Right? So they were doing a disservice to the Vaishnav community. So therefore anyone intelligent rejected basically Vaishnavism just in principle, just because they were so uncultured, uneducated, and not able to, discuss or behave nicely in a educated or cultured forum. Lahiri Mahashai, my Gurudev lives in that cottage and does his bhajan there. He has taught me the essence of all the scriptures, which I have repeated to you. Right? Because he knew that they both knew the scriptures, so he just had to give the essence, and then he could apply it to everything. Right? So that's why you can see, just in a few months, he's come to such an advanced position. If you also wish to learn, then approach him humbly and inquire from him with devotion. Right, because that's the point, is you have the tadvidi pratipatena, pari prashnen. If you actually want to know, then you inquire submissively. Right? And if you want to get devotion, inquire with the devotion. Right? Like money gets money, so devotion gets devotion. Right? Come, I will introduce you to him. The Hiri Maharshi guided Devdas to Vaishnav Das Babaji's cottage and, after introducing him, left him with his guru and retired to his own room, quietly sitting down to continue his chanting while the following conversation ensued, right? So now, Lahiri Maharshi is a bit of a pundit for Shantipur, right? But Vaishnav Das is a pundit in Varanasi. You know, so that is, you know, so in Bengal, Shantipur is the place. But in India, it's Varanasi. That's always been, you know, a place of knowledge. So he's a pandit there, not just a grihasta. He was a sannyasi pandit, so even beyond them. So you're not going to get much more of a pandit than him. Right? Vaishnav Das. Have you concluded your education, my son? Devdas. I have studied up to Muktipada and Siddhanta Kushamanjali in Nyaya Shastra. In Smriti Shastra, I've read all the books, right? So he's, have you concluded? One is that, you know, how you finished how you want to study? And two is, have you finished the actual course of study? Yes. Mm. You know, because there's two aspects of study. How much you want, how much is the full course, and how much you actually can study. Yes. Like that. So in here, it would include both of these, whatever it is. So just, he would then be able to say what it is. Right? Mm-hmm. So Muktipada, Siddhanta Kushamanjali. So these are, you know, these are major works like that. And then Smriti is read all the books. Yes.
So Maharaj in Nyaya Shastra did not study all the books.
No, it doesn't appear to. Studied up to, it could be that there's something more beyond it, some commentaries or some other things like that. So the point is Vaishnav Das would know what he's talking about here. You know, so it's kinda like, you know, like that. Yeah. Vaishnav Das, I see you have worked hard in your studies of the scriptures. What have you learnt? What is the outcome of your efforts? Right? So he's using, because the other one's his father, so he's just going to say, hey, what's going on here? You should come home, you know, because you got all these things to do. No, but these things, this, so he showed him. But now this is going to be a very technical discussion, because now he's approaching as a teacher. So it's that his approach is naturally you want to know who the student is, what you know. And so by studying, you know, so how much he studied, that's a lot. So he's worked hard. So now do you feel you've concluded? What have you gained from this? Devdas, one must constantly strive for mukti. I am searching for mukti through the faithful execution of my prescribed religious duties. Right? So in other words, he's gained from scripture, liberation is there. So you perform your prescribed duties for liberation. Right? Karmakandi is, I want, you know, the heavenly facilities, so through the diligent performance of my duties, I will get that. Right? But, you know, does that make sense? But bhakti means you're doing, you're diligently performing your prescribed duties to please Krishna. That's why externally it may look the same. Right? Vaishnav Das, yes, I was like you once. I have also studied those books and sought the release of mukti.
All right. So again, it's teaching Krishna technique to identify with the other.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because in other words, he knows all this. He's appreciated. You've worked hard for all that. Not that that's all useless, you know, because that's generally what devotees do.
Yeah.
So it's not so much. Means we'll call it, you know, straight preaching or hard, but it's also, it's true, but at the same time, as it doesn't have to be uncultured. So we can see here is that the preaching that's used here is direct to the point, but it's very cultured. So that becomes, because if you meet a professor at the university, 60 years old, he's sitting in the chair, he's worked hard and he has a lot of knowledge, but it's just there's conclusions of that knowledge that he hasn't gained yet. So that's what is to be gained. And if he gains that, he'll be able to teach those to all his students. Like that. So it's not that, oh, that's all useless. On one sense, if he's proud, yes, then it's all useless. Right? You know, just like the pundit in the boat. He's proud of his knowledge. And he's already insulted the boatman many times. But now they're out in the middle of the water, and if he can't swim, none of his knowledge is going to help him. You know, so the boatman's ability to swim is going to get him a lot farther in life, you know, like that. So it's Yes, so depending on the mentality. So the mentality is good, so is you use a gentler approach. There's attitude, you counter with attitude. Right? But it has to be the exact attitude, you know. Otherwise, then you can go with this gentle, but then you have to suffer so many insults until such point as they see that you're not attacking, then they'll calm down. But depending upon how aggressive they are, that may take longer or shorter. Does that make sense? So that would require much more good quality. But at the same time, much of the time, if somebody with attitude appreciates someone with attitude. But it has to be exact. You have to be more clever than them. In other words, someone with attitude, you use cleverness. Right? Because their attitude, they think, I know so much, and so therefore I'm so good. But actually being so good means it's applied knowledge. Right? So applied means it's clever. So if you're clever, then they'll appreciate. Does that make sense?
Can we say that the modern education system, whether it is engineering and medicine, because it's not in line with the Vedic studies, so it's a complete waste of time?
No, it's not a complete waste of time. It works in those areas. The point is why, if engineering, why do you want to build a bridge or a building? Right? It's so it can be used in Krishna's service. So that's what they're missing. Right? Or medicine. Why have a healthy body? Unless, therefore, you can perform Krishna consciousness. You understand? They think you have a healthy body, then you can enjoy life. Right? No, but you have a healthy body, therefore you can serve Krishna. Right? That's how you judge. So it's not a problem. It's just because it's not in connection with the Vedas, it just means that it's not as scientific. And so it's a little harder to see the connection between that and Krishna consciousness. Right? While the Shastra is saying these things, then you see much more that it's much closer, the connection. Well, when you're dealing with these modern, the knowledge has been separated from its source. So it's only been gained by observation, not by authority. Right? Modern medicine is there by observation. It means you go back, 100 years, let's say 110, 120 years. There's lots of doctors who didn't believe in germs. Right? Does that make sense? They didn't believe in germs. So it was a very common, it's where you had the hospital, next door was the morgue. Because so many people died. So it's just natural, you just take them next door, and you don't have to drag them across town. You know what I'm saying? So if a hospital is set up someplace, you know, the guy that makes the boxes, you know, the cooper, he just sets up next door, hey, you know, and then the guy with the, you know, does the, you know, arrangements, he sets up next door to him. You know, it's just the natural place. You know, just like you have the zoo, you set up your popcorn stand and all these different things for the kids. You know, it's just normal. You know what I'm saying? That's 120 years ago. You know, that's not a long time. And then they only started noticing there's something is germs. And so if you're not clean, patients die. Right? The Vedic system is be clean. That's why not so many people die. Right? Does that make sense? You don't really hear much in the Shastras or whether following the Vedic culture that there's these huge epidemics that everybody dies. You hear of a famine and everybody dies, but you don't hear of epidemics. You know what I'm saying? So that's more of a model because they don't know what cleanliness is. They have no idea. Right? So here is something that's just so short. So that's the problem. So how was that learned? It was by observation. Someone came up with the idea that there's these bugs, and others say it's humbug. You know, but after a while then they start, you know, more and more people are clean and their patients don't die. So when your mother gets sick, where do you take her? The hospital where they don't die so much rather than the one where they do die so much. Right? So then just out of practical, just for medicine to make money, you're only going to get patients if you also are cleaner. You know what I'm saying? So it's only through observation that they figured this out. You know? One guy, because when they do something and they sew the patient up, they would just pull a thread out of their cloth. You know, but it'd always go bad. But so somebody somehow or another figured out that when they used new cloth, then it didn't go bad. But it was only observation. You understand? That's the weakness. Well, the Vedic is its authority. Cleanliness is important because there are all these things are there. It's already there, so you just have to work with the science. But with them, as they spend 1,000 years to figure out simple things like, you know, washing your hands, you know. So they changed the bandage regularly, but they didn't wash their hands, you know. So then slowly they figure out you got to wash your hands.
It's not a waste of time. It's just taking a long time.
It's taking a long time. So you know, since. Depending on how much time you have, then you can call it a waste of time or not. No, the point is that it is the Vedic science, but it's that which is gained through pratyaksha, that's all. So those particular persons at that particular time, what they were able to see, that's there. You know what I'm saying? Because there were so many things that the Westerners, the Europeans didn't gain, but let's say like the Middle Easterners did. Like the Arabs had a more developed medicine than the Europeans. Right? Just because the modes of nature and the situation, so, you know, and being more close to the Asian culture, there was more of a concept of cleanliness. So their medicine was more developed. But still speculative. You know what I'm saying? But the modes of nature are different places, so they develop differently. You know? Does that make sense? You know? Like that. Or you have, say, your aboriginals. They'll be sitting out in, you know, like in Brazil or something. They know things. You get this signal. You just go get this leaf and you take that. The environment they live in is very clean, though they as a people may not be clean. But the environment is clean. So therefore, then it works. You know what I'm saying? But if you took the same people, moved them into the city, they'd get sick very quickly because they don't necessarily know cleanliness. You know what I'm saying? Plus, there's no herbs. So it's like, you know, it's not you can go and take a hubcap or something, grind it up, and then that'll get rid of your headache. You know, is that? Oh, time's up.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaur Premanand.